My name's Paul Bestall. This is Mysteries and Monsters on the Paranormal UK Radio Network. Welcome back to Mysteries and Monsters. This week, we delve into the world of Bigfoot with filmmaker and investigator Jay Bashashan. Over the last few years, we've seen a return to a more balanced style of cryptid documentary, with the emphasis being on factual and boots on the ground. With the 52nd anniversary of the Patty film just passing, our thirst for the mysterious hominid continues unabated. We cover a lot of ground, covering his documentary, Finding Jay, his paranormal career, and what's next for him. Before we dive in, don't forget we can be found on all the social media platforms except for MySpace. Subscribe to us on YouTube, and you can also support us on Patreon for $1 a month. Now, time to talk to Jay. Fresh off the back of his documentary, Finding Jay, I'm delighted to be joined by investigation filmmaker Jay Bashashan. Jay has been investigating the weird and wonderful for over a decade, first investigating the paranormal and latterly the world of cryptozoology. Jay, thanks for joining us today. How are we?
We're doing good. Thanks, Paul, for having me on.
Hey, my pleasure. It's always an interesting start to any conversation when I first talk with anyone in regards to how they ended up in this place, Jay, and for you, it's quite interesting. I know you refer to it in the film, but you originally sort of started in the paranormal, which kind of spiked your interest in the weird, and you've kind of gravitated towards. But when you first got into these things as a kid, what was the thing that got you fired into it? What was the case or whatever that made you think, wow, I'm really interested in these kind of weird things?
You know, I think it was just part of my DNA. I think since a kid, I'd watch the old creature feature, you know, the black and white movies, Frankenstein, Wolfman. That always intrigued me. But it wasn't until 1977 when I witnessed my first UFO. And this was actually a family sighting. It wasn't just me as a young boy. It was pretty much my whole family as we watch these lights in the sky. It was really close, spinning, hovering in the dark sky. The lights would go out within seconds. You know, it was across the lake from where we were at, spinning, and it would do the same thing. And kind of, it was very odd, but it really captivated me. And if it wasn't for my grandfather, God rest his soul, but my grandfather was he was in the early chapters of MUFON in Chicago. Mm. And he was really interested, of course, of what his 10-year-old grandson and his family saw. So I think it was at that point that I, at an early age, realized there's more to, what's really out there, you know, what you see in the movies and everything like that. So at that point, UFOs was always my first love of the strange and unusual. And so I've been following that pretty much my whole life. A lot of other weird, strange things that, you know, have happened to me throughout my life. But, you know, you really can't put your finger on it. But that was me. I felt like, I don't know, maybe a young Fox Mulder at the time, you know, just one in the making to really try to find out what the truth is behind of all these things.
Mm. I mean, I found that quite interesting because I know you refer to it in the film, your grandfather. I think that's a remarkable thing to have a relative and one so dear to you involved in MUFON, which kind of, I suppose, you were allowed to grow up with an open mind.
Oh yes, definitely. Of course, if you spoke about this with anybody else, people would be, rolling their eyes, or you saw a weather balloon, or it was swamp gas, and you just kind of, you kind of go through that with life of talking about main events, in their life. And and as a matter of fact, my father, way back when as well, took me to go to see, I think the name of the movie was Mysterious Monsters, of all things, which had Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, and the Yeti. And I remember watching that the Patterson film when I was a kid, saying, that's a guy in a suit. I mean, I remember saying this as a kid. I'm like, how could people really be this fooled? You know what I mean? By doing this. So you would think, after seeing a UFO, it was unidentified flying object. I don't know if there was little gray men or green men in it, but I really did not pay a lot of attention to Bigfoot. I always thought, with where we were, and this is throughout my life, thinking, everybody's been everywhere on this planet. We've covered every inch, being a little naive and maybe ignorant with that there's so many people out there, looking for this huge creature that somebody would have found it. So my whole life, Bigfoot has been nothing but a unicorn or a fairy or a leprechaun to me. I mean, it really has. And that's, I believe that's why I started in 2007 researching the ghost phenomenon. And it was at the height of, let's see, was it Taps Ghost Hunters that was on TV? And, of course, we're all influenced by the TV. But at the same time, I almost thought some of what was going on TV was just for entertainment. So I really wanted to know what was out there. And that's when we started researching the ghost phenomenon in 2007.
Yeah, my experience of ghost hunting is it's never as exciting as it's portrayed on television. It can be 6 or 7 hours of mind-numbing boredom in a darkened room or a house.
Boredom, or how about this? You would think that you would do so many investigations. Number one, you would have to have people call you and request you to come in, because you're not going to go door to door saying, "Hey, do you got a ghost in the attic? Can I investigate your house?" So, I put up a website in 2007, and we started getting requests of people saying we have weird things going on here. So we take it seriously with an open mind. But you know what? Our mission statement, and my mission statement stands today. We hunt the truth. You know what? If we get to some of these locations and we're able to debunk what's really going on, I'd feel good about that. Not so much saying, "Wow, there's really no such thing as a ghost," but we're doing our due diligence. We're doing our job of being able to say, "No, at this point, ma'am or sir, what you have up there is a loose board in the attic, and it's banging with the wind, and this is what's causing it." However, there are times where we're saying, "Hello, miss or sir, we have no idea what we just heard here, but we heard what you guys are talking about, and we cannot seem to debunk it," which goes under the lines of paranormal. And so with that, you have to, of course, go with an open mind as well as a skeptical scientific approach, being able to say, "What is it?" And so that's what we did for the first several years. I had a team, I think, of up to 10 people, and we would go research different areas and set up monitoring, surveillance, and laying out audio devices, and just going through hours and hours and hours of, what some could say is an EVP, or just the unknown. So I did that pretty much from 2007 to 2013.
I mean, to be honest, Jay, it's not really much for someone like me. I don't think there's much of a jump from the paranormal into cryptozoology, and because I've spoken to a few people who have a foot firmly in both camps, but it is unusual to kind of be so focused on one particular type of phenomenon for a while. as you were with the was it the WPI, I think.
Yeah, so it was a. It actually started out Wisconsin Paranormal Investigators. Of course, you just use the acronyms like everybody else did. Just shorten it down to WPI. You know what? Hey, you never know. But I actually even shortened it and combined it in 2014. Put the mission statement with the acronyms, which is WPI Hunts the Truth. That's the origin of that. I just. You know, at this point, I did not want paranormal just associated to what I do. Now, since then, since 2014, I pretty much went solo. I no longer have teammates. This is just me going out, doing it at my pace of what I'd want to do. And you're 100% right. It wasn't just all about ghosts. You know, it wasn't all about UFOs. In fact, we have... You know, Linda's a good friend of mine. She's, you know, 40 minute drive from my house, and I pass Bray Road every time I go up to the kettle. You know, so the Beast of Bray Road was really next. It was in my backyard. Yeah. I thought I would do a lot of, I call it patrolling. You know, I don't like to ever think of it as stalking or anything. They're public roads, but, you know, who knows? I have a dash cam that runs 24/7 on my car, and I've had that running for the past 7 years, and I'm just waiting for that day to try to be able to capture something unexplained on it.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem quite peculiar, because Wisconsin is one of those states that's kind of developed a modern mythology that's probably known around the world on a par with some of the states such as Washington and British Columbia and Oregon in regards to, you know, the weird phenomena that's being recounted there. Because obviously, like you say, Wisconsin is primarily associated more often than not in the modern era with the legend of the Beast of Bray Road and Linda Godfrey's fantastic work and all that. So it's quite peculiar that obviously Wisconsin has also had a long history of cryptid sightings, more normally known as or thought of as Bigfoot.
Yeah, and that's correct. You know, with this, you got to remember this state, just with the, well, just in our neck of the woods, I should say, is where the Ho-Chunk tribe, you know, was at. So you've got a lot of Native American lore, myth, just influence here in Wisconsin. And, you know, with that being said, you know, you do hear about some of these odd sightings, which honestly, on the BFRO site, there's not a big ton of Bigfoot sightings that have been actually documented and reported and put online. However, I have gotten really in touch with this small town that's in my southeast Wisconsin area, and been able to talk to a lot of, well, let's just say they're native to that area and they've grown up, and I'm getting a lot of stories that were never reported, which coincides with what I do. Now, you got to remember, right, I started out just investigating ghosts. You know, I was doing ghost and moved over to check out, you know, the Beast of Bray Road just to see what that was all about. Really got to know Linda, have her books, read her books, just really intrigued by it all. And I think at this point we were looking for the Beast of Bray Road, but it took us all the way up into the Kettle Moraine. So we found a place where we could just pull off. I remember it, August 19th, 2013, around 9 p.m., four of us just walking in the dark with nothing, you know, except my old IR video digital tape recorder. And we're just walking along, and we heard something that, until this day, I can't explain what it was, but it sounded almost primate-ish, if I can say that, which really caught me off, because I always say I'm not an outback Jack.
Yeah.
And I don't know every animal out there, so we do our due diligence and try to match that sound in the woods. And it took us several attempts to try to identify it, but we couldn't. And that right there was the birth of me looking into Bigfoot or Sasquatch. Again, remember, I didn't think it existed. I thought maybe it was just Harry and the Hendersons or some really bad movies made. And I'm watching all these other groups and people going out looking for Bigfoot. And I'm like, I'm almost snickering. Seriously. I'm almost looking at that as what you guys, you're never going to find that rainbow with leprechaun at the end of it, but it wasn't until that time where something happened to me where it really captivated me more so than UFOs, more so than the ghost phenomenon. And that's when I started going out almost like on a weekly basis to get out there. So after those vocals, I don't know. You know what I mean? It was like, maybe there is something to it, but you know what? You have to be out there. When you're doing your ghost research and you're investigating a building or a person's residence, you're only there for 6 to 8 hours. And then do you come back the next day or the following week, or do you revisit it in 6 months? How do you compare the data if nothing happened when you're investigating ghosts? And I applied this with the Kettle Moraine. Kettle Moraine was free. I did not need to be invited there. I could go out there whenever I wanted to. And that's what I started doing in 2013 and all the way up until today.
Yeah, I mean, it's a spectacular piece of land. It's one of those wonderful natural formations that just doesn't seem to look like anywhere else on Earth. It's a very unique location, Jay.
Yes, I mean, it is. And again, if you look at it on a map, a lot of people don't understand the, like you were saying, just the immense forest on how far it spreads. No, it's not Oregon or Washington or California or Pennsylvania or Ohio. It's this one stretch of 55,000 acres of kettles that were, caused by the glacier ice that formed the Great Lakes. And I always call them upside down mountains, because you don't really, when you're driving through Wisconsin, you don't see any big mountains or hills. But when you go to the Kettle Moraine, they're all indented. They're indented up to 300 feet. So this gives the whole area, with its, I mean, just with the forest itself and the terrain, wow, you know what? You could get lost in there, and never find your way out again. So it is. It's a nice stretch. And it goes up about 150 miles up through the state of Wisconsin. I call it the Green Mile because it kind of ends in southeast Wisconsin, but it actually opens up near the Great North Woods, Rhylander, Eagle River, then spreads out into Michigan. So I'm always looking at, wow, this would be a nice way for something to travel to be undetected.
Yeah, I mean it's a very unique that, like you say, the terrain is very unusual because it seems to be a pockmarked forest with lakes and ponds here and there and scattered around, and as you say, the gradients, it's like a wave has just washed through the area and given it that kind of contouring.
It sure is, and it makes it fun for hiking, especially when it snows. I always say it's the best, but it gets tiring after so long. But it is. There's plenty of what I would call sources, or I would say for anything to survive in that habitat, where they have everything they need to survive, or to from the small animals to the deer, just plentiful woods of animals for anything to live in. And again, going deeper than 2013, looking into it, of saying, would the kettle be able to inhabit such a creature as Sasquatch? I would 100% say yes, it could. A lot of people don't. Even my wife, I could come home and she supports me going out there. But I get that occasional eye roll, saying, "Oh, Bigfoot could exist, and it might exist on the West Coast, but Wisconsin, not really." And I'm like, "Well, you're not out there. If you start going out there, you're gonna start understanding there are weird things that you cannot explain."
To be fair, in all the weird things I'm into, it's Bigfoot that causes eye rolls in my partner as well, Jay.
Of course. That's what we got to call him, something different, you know. Something nobody's ever heard of before, you know. Call it Barney. What's a Barney? Yeah. Start explaining it. It's like, that's still a Bigfoot. I'm still going to give you an eye roll.
Oh, we'll just try and use some of the lesser known names. I think it needs a bit of a PR overhaul, I think.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's quite a leap, though, as well, Jay, to go from, you know, investigating the paranormal and getting into cryptozoology to then not only start investigating Bigfoot and going out into the kettles, but to then start to actually really document what you were doing and why you were doing it. So at what point did you think, I really need to start filming what I'm up to here?
You know, when I first went out there, I had what I called an all-in-one handheld device. I had my bright 1500 lumens attached to it, my audio device, my HD camera, and I was out there like if it was a film crew. Hmm. And I really never got any success by doing that a few times. And I started wondering, well, if I was hiding in the woods and I saw this big light coming towards me, I think my first instinct would be to hide, stay away. You don't know their intentions. But so I started going out there without lights, with a red light. You know, I knew my areas, and that's how we'd get around a low red light. I'd keep hands free. I'd keep an audio device going at all times. But you know what? When you're doing this, you really do need to document everything you do. I document by audio 100% from the time I leave my truck to the time I get back. Everything is documented, recorded, just in case, because you never know. Hmm. People do say that they saw something. They had their phone or camera on them, but they did not take the picture. I was there too. You know, when things happen, you do not – that's the last thing you think about is picking up a camera and, try to capture this. However, when there's nothing going on but something did happen, I like to document a testimony right then and there in the woods. Hmm. You know, if we heard something, something was thrown at us that we didn't catch on video, maybe we caught it on audio, I want to get the testimony. So I started doing that back in 2013. So I have 3 external hard drives that are almost 4 terabytes full of nothing but audio and video of every one of my trips out there. Mm. And it was 2017. I'm like, you know what? I want to start going back, not just going out there for the experience or hearing something or and be able to come back and talk about it. Even on social media, you could talk about it. You don't really know what it is. The next thing you know, a week later, it's old news. Mm. Then it goes into the abyss of the hard drive. Yeah. So it was then I thought, this is a prime opportunity to start going through from the very beginning, all the way up until when I was still doing this in 2018, that it was time maybe I start putting it together into maybe a short documentary I was going to just release on YouTube, 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
Well, about a year later during production and, you know, a 3.5-hour movie. It was longer than Avengers Endgame when it first came out. You know, and everybody I talk to is like, man, you got to cut this down to 60 minutes. I know that's what it said. And, anybody I'd be talking to, 60 minutes, you won't be able to get into an indie film and do this. You won't be able to do this. You won't be able to do that. But you know what? I had to tell my story. And it wasn't for indie film. It wasn't for fame or fortune. I wanted to tell my story as of what it is. That way, you know, you've watched it. You know, I unlike certain researchers out there, I don't push Bigfoot down anyone's throat when I'm talking about this, because in the end, do we really know that's what it was? Yeah, all the stories and other people's encounters coincide with what happened to me. So could it be? Yes, you know. but I needed to tell this story, and I'm glad it's reaching all the way over there in the UK, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah, and I think it's important as well, Jay, because like you refer to there, you don't say, well, it's definitely this or definitely that, or this is what it is and that's my theory and that's how it is. You basically take us on a journey with yourself and give us, the evidence as you find it, and that's all there is to it, which I think is a very fair and balanced way of presenting it, in such a way that you're not being pushed towards a particular train of thought.
Right. Well, the thing is, with this, I listen to. I'll give another. Can I give another podcast a shout
Yeah,
out?
of course you can.
Okay. I listen to a lot of Sasquatch Chronicles with Wes Germer, out in Washington. And when you're listening to these for years and years, and you're listening to all these different reports that have happened in Kentucky, Texas, Washington, let's go over into your neck of the woods. Just so many. Different, witnesses with encounters that I'm experiencing over here. Is that pure coincidence? You know what I mean? And I, with that being said, I had to look at this a lot closer, just like anybody else would do, and accept that because, when rocks are being thrown at me, I really don't know who threw them. They were thrown. I don't know by what. I know in my documentary, as you saw, Hunter said it's possible Hunter's throwing them to get my attention. But with that being said, if you looked at the terrain of the Kettle Moraine, the accuracy was dead on, and every time a rock landed by our feet, and we weren't stationary, we'd move and stop, and they were always right there. That's somebody with doggone good accuracy, I'll tell you that. And then the final of a bunch of stones being whipped at me, how do you explain that? And I think that's what we had to do, and that's why when I was putting all this together, I wanted to see not only my journey but the behavior of what's been going on, the different activity encounters, or even my own sightings. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I mean, that was a perplexing explanation, I must admit, because I think if a hunter's that good with a stone, Jay, I don't think he needs a gun, to be fair. Because I think if you've got that ability with to get people's attention, I think you could be taking quite a lot out if you're that good a thrower.
Well, exactly. Now you got to remember, there's nobody on these paths at all. And I'm really thinking, if somebody really wanted us to leave and they were surveilling us, why throw a stone to stop us? We were gonna keep going. Why are you trying to scare us away? We were gonna go. Now we stop to research it. And that was one of the best times that I ever had my camera rolling still. That it wasn't just the sound. I captured that on. On video, which is extraordinary to me, because how many times are you around when something unexpected happens and your camera's rolling? And so I was definitely perplexed by that. And of course, you saw the film, and I won't give any spoilers here or anything. You could watch it and judge for yourself. But you saw that branch move, didn't you? When after the rocks were done, There's no animal on that. I don't know how it bent down. It didn't wobble as if a small animal was on it. Something pulled and held it down, something that we couldn't see.
I mean, like you just touched on there, Jay, as well. I always find that quite interesting that some people say, "Oh, yeah, they're throwing stones to get rid of you." But like you say, you were actually leaving where you were,
Right.
and the stone actually stops you leaving. So then, I see that argument as being counterproductive because it's not having the response.
Exactly. Well, then that's what I'm saying. Let's just say it was a hunter. I don't know if it was a Sasquatch, but let's say it was a hunter. The hunter now just stopped me, counterproductive, like you said, and we're still hanging around. But let's say it wasn't a hunter. Now I get a lot of, Jay, somebody was just out in the woods messing with you, just throwing stones at you. Then I'm thinking, the black jacket I was wearing, I could have been DNR. out here, or some other authority. So somebody's going to throw rocks at police officers or something. That wouldn't be too smart. Again, is it possible? Is it plausible? No. Or if somebody is growing or distilling something illegal out there, or somebody who's on the lam trying to hide from the law. Again, why are you trying to get my attention? Why are you stopping me from leaving? It's just my approach.
Yeah, very much so. And it is quite perplexing, and the gentleman that's with you when it happens, the look on his face is really made me laugh. He's just stunned.
Well, so was I. I mean, you remember the other account again in the documentary. I was with Linda Godfrey, and at this point, I believe I was hit in the head with a rock. And this was a week before me and Sanjay were out. That's the other gentleman I was walking with during that hike. I was telling you, after that happened, I started looking into hard hats because I was not going to go out in the woods anymore with, no protection on my head. I'm like, I'm not going to get beamed with a rock out there. This is crazy.
Yeah, I mean it is an unusual portion to the Bigfoot story, is this stone or pebble throwing, especially when it seems to throw a handful to kind of cause a distraction. It's an unusual response, and I find that, I know it's been seen in other primates, but it is an unusual kind of animal response even.
Well, exactly. And again, to me, because in the bottom line, people are saying, well, what is a Bigfoot? Is a Bigfoot an animal? Is it part animal, part human? Again, that's hard to tell, but I could tell you're 100% right. I don't really think that it's animal behavior in Southeast Wisconsin. Will it be with other primates in the world? Absolutely. I'm not around a bunch of monkeys or apes or anything to really to look at and identify to say that's the behavior of that. But the biggest thing is whatever threw the rocks, an opposable thumb to be able to pick the rock up and throw it. That's all I know.
Yeah, I mean, and plus the other, like you say, the other usual catch-all explanation for this is that, oh yeah, it's somebody mucking about. So are we expected to believe that someone is following you 24 hours a day because they'll know exactly when you're going out, and then secrete themselves wherever you may decide to wander?
Exactly. And again, well, what I've always learned in doing ghost investigating is that if it can be done by a human, 99.9% it could be done by a human or natural. All right, I don't want to just say, especially being out in the woods, because some things can happen that aren't man-made, but could be natural. And I mean, you're 100%. That's the way I always, I think, deal with encounters, is that I don't get overly, giddy about it. And maybe it's I'm slow to process it because I don't really believe that's happening.
Yeah, well, I mean that to me sounds as daft. I mean, I was speaking to Adam Benedict from the Pine Barrens the other week, and we were talking about some of the wild man stories he'd uncovered. And the usual excuse for those sightings was that some lunatic had escaped an asylum and run off to live the rest of their lives in the woods. But as I said, as me and Adam both pointed out, in most of the stories, they're not describing hairy men, men who are hairy. They're describing hairy men, which is a different thing.
Right, and that you're 100% right there. I mean, there's been the reports of the wild man, and again, it was never a man covered in fur like a bear or any other type of animal, but hair, long hair everywhere. So that's kind of prehistoric, or not prehistoric, but almost caveman, of approach.
Yeah, and it's quite peculiar because when you think about it, within reason, in the modern experience of Bigfoot, we don't seem to tend to have many violent encounters or threatening encounters. It seems to be quite a mischievous, passive almost kind of experience for people these days, for the majority
Well,
anyway.
for the majority, and I always say with this, just because I'm able to tell the story, to put out some footage, doesn't mean it was always a peaceful one. Now, a lot of them were, but maybe because we don't hear that the other ones are aggressive is because those people are no longer to be heard from again, which, you know, brings up the other, you know, missing people, the missing 411
yep.
and all the state forests. So maybe those people can't come out and saying, don't let these things fool you. They're very aggressive and they took me, and, you know, but they can't say that because they're not here. I don't mean to make light of that. I'm just saying the ones that are telling you it's peaceful are the ones that are experiencing peacefulness. I mean, be getting hit in the head with a rock by, you know, from me,
yes.
That didn't seem too peaceful.
No.
You know, and again, who knows? It was just Linda and I out in the woods. Again, who's sitting out there? Like you said, is somebody always one step ahead of me getting to an area, which I have five different locations. I never say where I'm going. I never say what day or time. So these people that are trying to get ahead of me must be, you know, mind readers or, you know, psychic or something. I don't know, you know, and getting right to where we're going to stop and do, you know, an experiment or something. So I have no idea. There's just a lot of strangeness that's been happening to me since I've been researching.
There is one thing I really, really like about the film. I think it's rather charming, Jay. There's a really nice strand of charm that runs through the film, intersected with all the expeditions into the woods, with a variety of your family joining you on your many expeditions, and they all seem to take it slightly differently depending on which member of the family you take into the woods with you.
Well, exactly, and thank you. I think the charming part has to be something part of my DNA of putting this thing together, because you see so many different documentaries out there. There are a lot of great documentaries out there. I wanted to put out something different. And again, I didn't want to just be the next the floating heads, being able to tell you a story, you know what I mean? That type of thing. I wanted actual witnesses, whether it was my family or not, and whoever I decided to take out, because, you know, again, my family, my wife, she rolls her eyes. She'll go out during the day and she'll go out just for a nice hike, but that's it. It doesn't go anywhere near Bigfoot because she didn't grow up that way. Same with my kids. Well, my kids really, I guess, don't have a choice because their dad looks for this. So, you know, they're going to grow up thinking since birth that, yeah, Bigfoot 100% exists and it's out there because of me. However, when we go out there, I do like to say we're out in nature. You know, you find a track. It's an animal print. That could be a raccoon. That could be a coyote. That could be a dog. And we take pictures of it, and we come back home and look at different comparisons. And, you know, so I'm trying to teach them that way more so than, hey, there's a big hairy man standing behind every tree out there. Mm-hmm. But you know, when we go out there, doing that is when you least expect it. Mm-hmm. You know, you saw the documentary that I was just going to go for a 45-minute hike during the day in December, and it turned into something hair-raising to me, my son, and my youngest daughter. Mm-hmm. And I think I've actually stopped. I've been going out. If I take them out now, I'm actually with another adult too, because it's all about safety. And you just got to practice that first. But thank you for saying it is charming, because, well, you know, I just have a charming family.
Yeah, no, it's good. And I particularly like the scene where you go out with I believe it's your nephew, Ben.
Yes.
And fair play to Ben, walking about in the woods in a pair of jeans. Good luck to the lad.
Yeah, right.
I was very impressed with his cojones, to be fair. But that's quite an interesting portion of the film, because obviously you stumble across that extremely large stone.
Right.
That seems to have just been randomly placed. Because at first you think, well, probably the tree's grown around it, until
right.
Ben starts manipulating it and you realise, well, no, that's been put on it.
Right. And you want to hear something about that scene. And I didn't even do this, but I have a 8-year-old daughter, 12-year-old son, and a 29-year-old daughter, and a 4-year-old granddaughter. But my oldest daughter, who wanted to sit down with me on, was a Father's Day, and we sat down and watched it together. That particular scene, she mentioned something I didn't even pick up. In fact, nobody's mentioned this. But you remember when Ben moved that stone that was probably close to 300 pounds, right? Do you remember what was underneath the stone on the tree?
No.
There was snow.
Oh yeah, no. That's what made it stand out to me, because I was looking at obviously, because it comes to sort of like a point, so it looks like it's collapsed. So you can see
Right,
the branches
right.
going up, and obviously there's no snow on there. But obviously where the tree's resting on the ground, it's clearly covered in snow. And then when he moves it and you see the snow underneath, I was like, well, who's put that there? Because that's clearly been put there recently.
Right. And again, by what? Like I said, when my daughter picked it up, I was like, wow, good eye. And I'm hoping that everybody that watched that noticed the same thing because, at one point, Ben does say, well, who would have put this here and from where? The bigger thing is it had to have been with when it was snowing because that rock has been moved there. And again, it was only what, maybe a foot above the ground into the tree, but it was very weird. And again, could a person have done it? Yes, a couple people could have lifted that stone there and put it there, but for what reason? Again, we don't know. We didn't see a Bigfoot lift it and put it there, but it is still something that's very odd and something unexplainable. That coincides with everything else that's been going on around there.
I mean, well, that's the point as well, because obviously, prior to you stumbling across this stone, Ben says, I think we're lost. So even if we are suspecting that at the same time you and your nephew are in the middle of the woods, Jay, two random people who are trying to hoax you have gone into this riverbed, lifted up this extreme, because Ben can't, I mean, he can move it slightly, but there's no way he's lifting it up, like you say, because it's a heavy stone.
Right.
And then disappear without leaving footprints as well, of course.
Yeah, there was nothing. Well, that's what I'm saying. There was nothing there. None of it made sense. In fact, I think Ben at that time was more a little freaked out. It was more Blair Witch Project-ish because he's like, here's a tree that's down with a huge stone he can't lift. Something's not right here. And this is all right after hearing what sounded like a wood pop. Leading into afterwards, we kind of sat down and did a little stakeout. And I'll tell you, when you're out into those kettles and there's snow on the ground and you have no lights on, you can see like an animal. You can see every tree, every branch. Some of the depth will throw you off, of course, because you're just in a vast woods, but you can see like an animal. It's weird. And again, while we're sitting there, we're seeing what looks like this shadow. And we both didn't really tell each other that when he first saw it. He thought he was seeing things, of seeing something that was like this big shadow that was moving, and he knows his head wasn't moving, but he's never said anything to me. And as I'm talking to him, all of a sudden I'm seeing it, and I'm like, wait, what am I looking at? It almost looked like the shape of a kite. Your old-fashioned kites. Kind of like triangular, where it's real wide on the side and it goes down to a narrow point. And it was just standing out where it was moving side to side. But then when I looked at it, it glided, my best guess, 10 or 15 feet to another tree, but it looked like it was on a wire. It was just, and again, at that point, you're like, am I just seeing this? You want to see Bigfoot so bad that you're going to go out and your mind is going to put that out there. So I really, it was a really tough one. It was a really weird night.
Yeah, it certainly raised the spooky levels. I mean, I found, like you say, Ben's reaction was he was more worried about witchcraft than Bigfoot, which I think is an extremely positive response. I think, yeah, he's fine with the possibility it could be a giant hominid running about, but God forbid it could be witchcraft.
I know, exactly. Yeah. Well, he's always doing that. His first love is has always been aliens. So, when he's out there, he goes, Jay, I know you're more grounded than I am with this stuff, but I'm thinking it's more UFOs and aliens out here than it is Bigfoot. I've gone out with people that are, still more into the paranormal, saying, no, it's more spiritual and ghostly out here than Bigfoot or aliens. I'm going out there saying, well, no, I think it's more Bigfoot than it is either one of those. But you know what? I think at the end of the day, it's all the same.
Well, it is. I think the difficulty with some of this is that, as with any kind of fringe subject, Jay, people will always try and label it regardless. You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
Oh, definitely. Again, with that, I don't understand how people in the ghost field look at people in the Bigfoot field, or vice versa, or there's just so many different fields that I'm saying, why not look at them all as a whole? As a matter of fact, a lot of times people would always ask me, they would say, so are you a paranormal investigator? And I'm like, no. Are you a cryptozoologist? I'm like, no. A ufologist? No. I came up with a new one. I'm a truthologist. I always say, you know what? Just that's really what I'm searching for. And whether it's in, just anything, I like to know what the truth is. And I never heard that title before. And it really, I'm not going to label myself that, but I'm just saying, I don't like to be just category under one field or another. I've always been that way since, like I said, if it's strange and unusual, and my neighbor came knocking on my door right now saying, Jay, I know you're into this, come on over. And I go over to his house and his couch is spinning around. I'd be really researching that for a while. If a UFO came over our hometown and I saw it, which this happened a couple of years ago, I was in my car chasing it, trying to film it, trying to follow it. It just eluded me. You know what I mean? So it's whatever's coming up is kind of what I'm on.
I mean, does that sort of open the door to sort of say that, because, like, as we refer to, you've kind of spent the best part of what, five years now, in the Bigfoot field, Jay. So is it something that making this film has continued and built on that 5 year passion, or is it kind of thinking, well, I should, can I look at doing things concurrently, so doing two things at once rather?
And the thing is with that, and that's an interesting question. And a lot of people are really baffled that I'm still doing the research for Bigfoot, because if I was into UFOs and ghosts came my way, I kind of slid from that to ghost, and ghosts were a little part of a couple of years of my life, but not as long as what this research for Bigfoot has been. No, I'm not going anywhere fast with this. I'm still currently researching. I was out the past 2 weekends, because I don't think I'm looking for any more stone throws or beady red eyes or rocks or structures or these things. My goal a couple of years ago was trying to make contact. And I have a certain hand signal that I do out there. A lot of people are calling me the Jay Goodall, like Jane with the chimps, going out there trying to study the Bigfoot. Here comes Jay Goodall, with his approach. But I have. I do a certain voice. I will do a certain hand gesture, and I'm sure I'm making all the raccoons and possums laugh at me while I do this. And the people I go out with will kind of give me an eye roll or whatever, but this is what I need to do, because this really is the next step. Is I don't believe capturing it on video or audio, and this whole field is going to change it. I think everybody has their own idea of their own truth. I wanted to find my own truth and, share it with people that are willing to listen, And I think that's how we kind of came to know each other as well on social media, is to be able to just share what we know. But I really do. I've got like a moth to a flame. I want contact. And people are like, well, be careful what you ask for.
Yes.
You know, because my wife would always say, you know what? She'd say, Jay, if you go out in those woods and you die, I'll kill you. And I'm like, it's fine. Safety first, safety first. I never go out alone, not out of fear, but just out of intelligence and common sense that anything can happen out in those woods. It's uncontrolled. Animals, you could run into people you don't know. So, but that's where the moth to a flame is. I really don't care the dangers, which is, I don't want to say frightening or anything because I still take precautions, but I want to be out there all the time. If I could, if I was a millionaire and just retired, I think I'd be like the richest, you know, wild man out in the woods. You
Well,
know?
yeah, very true. I mean, I've always said, Jay, if I'm fortunate to win the lottery, that's it. I'm moving to Canada, and that's all I'm going to do for the rest of my life is go Bigfoot
Right.
hunting.
Hey, you know what? If you do, give me a call because I will I'll help you. I won't absorb all your riches or anything, but you know, and that's what it is. It's about network. It's about people's passion for this subject is, you know, I'm not out there again, and I can't reiterate it of saying I'm not out there for the fame and fortune part of it. I'm out there to find the truth. And I know a lot of people are, so I'm no different because I've actually heard a lot of your guests on your podcast, which is a great podcast, by the way.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're a great interviewer. And so I'm listening to other people researching this, looking for the truth as well. So it doesn't really set me apart or make me special in any way. But the reason why I put out Finding Jay, my documentary, was to show that journey into what I'm doing that I'm still currently researching right now. A lot of people are asking if, you know, will there be a Finding Jay 2? Well, most likely I'm still documenting every time I go out there. While I was making Finding Jay, I was still researching and documenting. So, you know, it's something that I just want to be able to put out there and say, hey, my name's Jay from Wisconsin. I look for Bigfoot. That's it. End of story.
I mean, have you found it's changed your outlook on anything, Jay? Not just in the field of Bigfoot, because when I've spoken to people before and I've spoken to witnesses and things, there seems to be some kind of emotional change that they go through, where they seem to view the world through a slightly different lens, if that makes sense.
Well, and it does because I've had a couple sightings of something I can't explain, and I always say I can't unsee it. Whatever this phenomenon is in the woods is a lot different from UFOs and a lot different from ghosts. Whether you've seen a UFO or had a ghost experience, there's almost like this imprint of you that is left in the woods. I don't know how to explain it. But I have talked to other researchers where they feel the same. There is a drive, like I said about the moth to a light or to a flame. There is something that imprints you about changing your views of saying, you know, there's more to what we understand or what anybody's letting us onto. Because, you know, you could talk about, well, why doesn't the government tell you that there's these things out there? You know, they know they're out there, but they're not going to say they're out there for what reason? I mean, who knows? But you know what? That's all white noise to me. Hearing different researchers bicker back and forth of, you know, I posted this, they see this, they don't see it. You're just a troll. Get out of, you know, and you just see all the drama that's out there about we're doing the same thing. Trying to find out the truth. We're all imprinted with this to get out into the woods and to find these answers. So, yeah, every day I go to work, but I don't think there's I don't think there's a day that I never think about Bigfoot. That
Well,
sounds weird.
no,
It's like, you know, people are like, you're a dude, you're just obsessed. And I'm like, well, I'm not saying obsessed, but you got to think about all these different things that you've gone through, and it's natural. It's like breathing or tying your shoe. You just think about it, and you're trying to solve it. So that's it has changed my view, but hasn't really affected my, you know, my life. They're not locking me up yet.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you've got a perfectly good excuse for thinking about Bigfoot on a daily basis, Jay, because obviously you go out and look for him and you've made a film about him, whereas I have no excuse at all and I still do the same. So.
Well, but the thing is, it's just this. It's the networking. It's the believability. You know, you can look at different people and, you know, I'm not going to knock Todd Standing one way or another because either you're a fan of his or you're not. Mm-hmm. Either or, the guy's out there. He puts in the hours. He's got boots to ground. And that's something to said whether you believe him or not. And I'm not going to defend him one way or another because, you know, he knows it's a Bigfoot. And that's the problem I have is how do you really know, you know, not until you really see it. But, you know, with that being said, you personally, Paul, are hearing different stories. You're interviewing different people that are telling you these things are real. And we're not just trying to blow smoke and sunshine to try to get on a podcast and to climb the social media ladder of being, you know, the elite of the elite of, no, you know what? It is real. And that's why you're getting imprinted from everybody else. And the more you get out there and win that million and get to Canada, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I've got to go to Australia first. I've got an invitation to go yowie hunting. So I've got to take them up on that first. And I've never been to Australia, so I'm going to
I've never been to the UK, so I'll fly over by you. We'll get a connecting flight and go down to yowie hunting.
Absolutely. We'll get a team of all-stars together. We'll see how we go.
That'd be great.
So, I mean, since the film's come out, have you found that you're spending more time out there now, Jay? Or do you think when you first started, were you full of the enthusiasm and you were out as much as you can? Or has it been a constant level of investigation?
It's always been constant. I try to get out there weekly. And I don't say what day. I just like to be out there. Again, imprinted, moth to flame. It's not so much, all right, well, I should get out there. It's a beckoning. It's a call. I need to be out there. So even when I was working in production and finding Jay, I never stopped hiking ever. It might have slowed down here or there because, you know, again, I do have to put life in priority, and I do have a family, and there are events going on. And, yeah, there's gun deer season, which you don't want to set foot out there for a long time because you don't want to get mistaken. But it's always there, been there. My passion, this subject, this phenomenon has never gone away. It's never dwindled. That's something that's happened in ufology with me, with the ghost phenomenons happened with me, you know, to where it just tapers off. I've been full steam ahead like a locomotive this way, even though, you know, I might not get out for, you know, there might be 2 or 3 weeks that I might not get out. And I'm like, oh, you know, they're having a party up there. You know, I got to get up there. They're waiting for me. You know, that's kind of that feeling you have. But I will. I'll still, you know, I'm still a family man, still a husband, and I will do, you know, and just keep going with life without being like Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters, you know, start to throw dirt in the window saying, I'm going to make a Bigfoot hut. I'm not there, but but my passion has never gone down. I'm, if you can hear me, because I do love to talk, but I'm always excited to talk about this subject.
Yeah, I mean, I've been fascinated with it since I was about 8, since I first saw the Patty film, and it's always kind of, it's enthused me ever since, and it's probably the one thing, like you say, about paranormal and ufology. I've kind of had bursts of intense excitement in both those subjects for a while, and then kind of by the noughties I'd got really jaded by both subjects, if that makes sense. And I don't really want to hear about Roswell anymore. And this is there not anything else happening? And obviously because I'd drifted away from it, I'd missed some really good cases. Obviously I've kind of come back round to being really interested in it due to a few things, a couple of really good books I've read about the subject, and there's a brilliant podcast by a guy called Ryan Sprague called Somewhere in the Skies, which is a fabulous ufology podcast. And it's things like that that have made me think, oh, actually, there's a lot more been going on. So what you're saying there about it tapering off, it seems to be the one thing that's kind of really bitten you this time.
You know, and it is. And again, for me, it's when I say in my backyard, it's about a 40-minute drive north of where I live. But it literally is right here. I always say ufology. I'm always like, the government's got that whole market cornered. You know, you're not going to find anything else out that they don't want you to know, or, you know, you could come to your own speculation. So how do you really research it? By talking to people, hearing their stories, you know, documenting and going, aha, it's real. Then what? Where do you go? It's honestly, it's like ghost investigating. You can capture an EVP, or see something or capture something moving, and then what? Where do you go from there? Besides, yes, it's a ghost. Yes, it's a UFO. What are they? Right? Mm. And with me being out in the woods, I've had the sticks. I've seen beady red eyes. I had a tree pushed down right by us. Mm. There's all these things that, okay, let's say it's Bigfoot, but now what? Mm. You know what I mean? Everything ends right there just with the experience or the encounter. No, I want to go deeper. And I believe the kettle is where I can go deeper at my pace, at my passion, versus anywhere else. You know, I'm always saying you can't hunt the truth unless you're out in the field, boots to ground.
Mm, absolutely. I think the one thing that's always struck me, and you stumble across one of them as well, and I've always found these fascinating, is the structures that sometimes are found. And it's something you point out about how it's made, is the fact that it's weaved. Which, if it's a gang of kids, you know, I've built dens in the woods. You don't do that. You just try and fit as many straight things as you can together.
You're 100% right. You know, you go out there and you see... and again, I come across in pictures, the best place to find them, this is like Men in Black saying the best place to find UFO encounters is the Inquirer, you know, the best place to find these tree structures or any evidence, honestly, is online, Facebook, Instagram, you know, not saying that they're true, but not saying they're false. This is where you really have to be able to go facts to fact, because if I'm seeing something that somebody just posted and everybody's ripping on it that it's a deer blind for hunting, a hunter's blind, that they did that there. And I'm like, wait a minute, I came across the same one here in Wisconsin. See, now that's where you got to keep your eyes open and your options open, you know, or your just openness to not poo-poo everything with that. But you're 100% right. When I came across this structure, I was actually with Mary Marshall. So she'll still hike with me of the Paranormal MD, which, by the way, you should get her on here because she is a wealth of knowledge in the whole field of just anything paranormal or the fringe, I should say. Mm. But we were out there and she was, you know, we started getting referred to as Mulder and Scully out there. I was Mulder. I wanted to believe. She was Scully saying, you know, it's there, but let's take a step back, Jay, or Mulder. Let's take a step back, you know, saying, no, that's a deer blind. I've seen plenty of these. But as I said, the way these things were put together just blew my mind because, like you said, making a den or a fort or anything like that, you're going to take your long sticks and make teepee-ish or to get under there. Or you could just push a bunch of pile together to make it look natural. But you're not going to take a little piece of 2-inch wood stick and slide it right in between one of the ends of the corners because it didn't make sense for it to be there. You know, if somebody's going to build a deer blind and try to make it look natural, they're not going to try to find a little piece of 2 inches of thin wood that could slide that you could actually just pull out by yourself. Mm. You know, it was not there for a structure, for protection, for anything, and they were all over. Mm. It was weird.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you first see it, and I think Mary's and yourself, you spot them, at first you think, oh, it looks like they've entwined it around the wood, but like you, It isn't. It's just a piece of a piece of very thin wood that's just been formed into a shape and left to dangle.
Right. And again, you saw that they're just kind of hanging there. So again, I mean, the big, kind of like a looped tied knot, and they were not tying anything together. It made no sense for it. And it's another reason why I put this out on social media is, or even my personal Facebook site, is because I want somebody to say, Jay, you're crazy. We made this. We made this for this reason, and it's, we make them this way because, they could hang something from that. Who knows, right? But I've never gotten any response. That's why I put it out there. And I don't say, hey, Bigfoot made this structure, but I want to say, look at this weird structure. And nobody can really come back and tell me either or. Let's just leave it as that. It's a hunter's blind or whatever.
I mean, to be fair, they're usually far less physically demanding ways to build a blind, and most experienced hunters have their own kind of setup. They don't bother using what nature gives them, Jay. They tend to bring their own stuff in and build it as they find it.
Exactly. And I'm going to go back saying I deer hunted for several years, back in the 2000s, probably to 2011, actually, with my father-in-law. It was a nice bonding thing we would do, but I would get my own tree stand and climb up, 23 feet and kind of sit there. Well, they also had, he had a ground blind, which you can sit in this almost camouflage teepee type tent that you can lower down your windows to be able to, unzip them to be able to see to take your shot. Now you have those unzipped windows that go all around you. Well, I was taught back then that you want to keep one open. You don't want to be able to see a silhouette through the other window because your slight movement is exactly how the deer can detect you. Now, this helped me with the structure that I found because if there were hunters in there, there's silhouettes. There's no way a person can 100% stand still in a position for that long of a time without moving, and that is going to spook the deer. That's just the behavior of the deer. So, so again, the way this thing was made, I'm not going to say it was teepee. You saw it was in teepee-ish where a Bigfoot's going to go in there and lay down, but I called it Bigfoot art. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe or it's the same Blair Witch people that put the stone up there. I don't know.
Well, that could be the even worse example, is that you actually, mistakenly stumble across some kind of satanic coven that's hiding out in the woods instead. But it certainly
Well,
doesn't seem to
right.
be that, in my opinion, Jay. I mean, it is just very odd because they are just unusual structures because, like you said, they don't seem to have a purpose because they're not well built enough to cover up. They seem to be quite higgledy-piggledy in the way they sort of lean to one side a little bit, and they're not very practical in any sense.
Well, exactly. And that's the, and honestly, if I had no other type of activity around me at that time, I might lean towards Blair Witch or Satanic or whatnot. But I've had too many coincidental same things happening to me that have happened to people all over the world with encounters. And that, to me, can't be just a coincidence. If I'm seeing something, and this was actually during filming of or production of Finding Jay, which is not in part of the film, could be in part two. I mean, who knows? People are asking me, when's the next one coming out? And I said, hey, it's about quality, not quantity. I just can't push something out for the sake of pushing it out. If it's worth putting it together, yes. But this was during production of Finding Jay, and when you go out there in the dark, because that's the way you do it, you. I know these trails so well that I feel as comfortable as sitting in my living room on my couch. Just safe, comfortable. You're out there. It's dark, so what? I've been out here 100 times. And we went out there just as it was done raining. So it was no longer raining, but you could hear the rainfall dripping off each leaf, which was kind of rhythmic around you, around the whole woods. And the guy I was going out hiking with, Chris, said, hey, can I do a wood knock? Because I don't wood knock or hoop or anything like that. And I said, yeah, go ahead. So he knocks. He's probably a little over 10 feet away from me. And it's pure pitch dark, so I can't even see him, barely, you know. And he knocks twice. It's so dark, I close my eyes to focus on hearing a knock back. Don't ask me why. I could have kept them open because it was just as dark, but it helped me to focus. And as I'm listening for a knock back, I'm hearing the rhythmic rainfalls off the leaves. And then from my right to my left, I heard what sounded like bipedal walking, no more than, you know, and again, this is all like guess and my senses, 10 feet behind me. Crunch, 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 and it stopped to my left. While I'm closing my eyes, listening for a reply knock, it stopped to my left. Now, Chris was, again, a little over 10 feet away and listening himself, but hearing the raindrops, everything gets kind of muddled up with sound. I couldn't even motion to him. I couldn't speak. I couldn't. It was a weird, I mean, this actual experience actually stopped me from going out in the woods for almost a month. I was done. I had no idea what we were dealing with anymore. All I know is something walked behind me and stood there. I didn't hear it go anywhere. And I'm like, whew. You know, it's that feeling of running upstairs from a dark room, like in a basement or something, and you think something's going to come up after you.
Yes.
That feeling. That was the initial feeling of just, I mean, I couldn't even breathe. I mean, I was just like, my eyes were still closed listening for the response knock. And what seemed like an hour, you know, listening to my audio device was only like a minute and a half before I was like, I broke out of it, took two or three steps towards Chris. He kind of met me, and I turned around right away, and I'm like, there's something that was just walking behind me. I threw on my thermal right away. I don't even know why I didn't throw my my torch on. You know, it's 1,500 lumens. It would have blinded anything. But I had respect for whatever was standing behind me, that I just wanted to see it in thermal in the dark, and there was nothing there, and I never heard it leave. Again, Chris didn't see it. You know, if you listen to the recording, it might be subjective because I told you this is what it sounded like. But it was right behind me, and the fear that I had, actually I was really ashamed because I didn't go out for a week or two because of the fear. You know, I mean, this is Jay, Bigfoot hunter, out in the woods. He's been doing it for years, but he's too scared to go back out there. It really rattled me. I always say I don't rattle, but that one really, really rattled me. You know.
Yeah, I mean it is unusual as well, because like you say, for that to happen when you've done it for so long and come across certain things, for it to spook you as much as that particular experience did, Jay, was clearly, I would imagine, a little bit of a shock to the system, like you say.
100%. You know, I was originally telling you I could be out there and feeling like I'm on my couch in my living room, just out with a friend or two friends or whatnot, and you just feel relaxed and you're out in nature and you're doing your passion, you know, and to turn around and get that rattled, you know, almost felt, made me feel, I think, less of a man, because, you know, we're men. We don't get spooked. We don't scare. That one really got me. Now, that didn't happen in Finding Jay at all, but that's documentation that I have while I was in production in Finding Jay. So it definitely was there. But again, a moth to a flame, or whatever imprint is on me, gets me to go back out there again, because, you know, you come to realize that if that was standing there, that's the contact I was looking for, yet I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't ready to turn around to face what it was. You know, I mean, you hear about it, you see all the pictures, you see the paintings or the drawings of what Bigfoot is. I mean, why would I be scared? They already said it's, you know, 7, 8, 9 feet tall and 4 feet wide. I'm expecting to see that, but something wasn't, I wasn't ready. And after several weeks, it was probably close to a month. I went back out, got back on the horse, so to speak, and went back out because I'm like, I'm still living to tell the tale, so maybe it's okay that they creep up behind me waiting for contact. I don't know. And that's why I keep going out there.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I mean, there is one particular part of the film that really made me laugh, and that's the baseball bat scene, because obviously we've all seen several programs where someone's gone into the woods wielding their best baseball bat, and that really made me laugh that you.
Yeah, that was this Kevin's bat. You know, like I said, is I don't bring anything out there, and I have a reason for that, but he did. And I'm like, all right, well, go ahead, film me, and I'll film you, and we'll see what we can catch. But as you saw, some of those trees are a little bit more stronger than your average wooden baseball bat. And I still owe Kevin a bat too. I feel bad. It's been 5 years, and I still never bought him when I should, and sign it for him and give it to him, saying, here you go.
Well,
But
Christmas is coming up, Jay.
yes, it is. But no, and that honestly, but that's true. And you were saying, why don't I pound or hit trees? Which I did in the beginning, I'll admit that. But after all the different knocks I've heard in different seasons, different areas, they've all sounded very, very close to being alike. You know, I have not put them through any type of audio spectrogram or anything with the different pitches, but just from what I hear, from what I recorded, that I think whatever is making the noise is not, a hand with a club in a tree, because none of that would make sense, because you'd have to find this, you'd have to have the same club, the same type of tree, because every tree is going to give you a different reverb and different pitches in the Kettle Moraine. And I've heard them in all different parts, and they all sound the same. You know, maybe some a little louder or not, but it's always that hollow wood knock to where I started thinking, you know what, maybe this is something to do with their hands or clapping on their chest or something with their jaw that sounds that way. I don't know. I've never seen it happen. But it's one of the reasons why I don't bring bats. Plus, as you saw with Kevin, you know, I break them apparently.
Yeah, you've a mean old swing on you, my friend.
I know, right? I'll give him one for Christmas. That's a great idea, Paul.
It is interesting. I've noticed this. That was one of the things that struck me about your film, Jay, was the fact that there's not the two usual techniques for attracting an encounter, which is wood knocking and hollering. I've seen a couple of really good recent documentaries over the last 2 or 3 years where people tend to seem to be moving away from that kind of
The approach of it, yeah.
assumed communication, because like you say, there doesn't seem to be any, there's no pattern, there's no rhythm, it doesn't seem to serve any purpose.
And not only that, but where did we all learn that from?
Yeah.
We learned it from Finding Bigfoot. And, you know, again, TV is does influence us. I mean, it does me. Again, I'm not nothing anything special, because I started doing that in the beginning too. But actually, a mentor of mine, Mitchell Townsend, out in Washington by Mount St. Helens, started telling me way in the beginning, Jay, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to prove to the world that these exist, or what's your intentions? And I said, my intentions are to go find the truth for myself and anybody that's willing to listen, but not to go out and prove it. And he said, lose the stick, lose the call. This is what he's telling me, as if it's a matter of fact. And this is me still hunting the truth in the beginning, like, all right, Mitch, I still don't think they're out there, but I will try your technique. And his technique was, they'll find you. Thus, the title of my documentary is Finding Jay. It could very well be called Finding Paul or Finding Katie. It's from a Bigfoot perspective of saying, I believe they already know you're out there. Just like any animal of the woods in the world, their senses know when you're out there. So let's say this is from a Bigfoot perspective. They know I'm out there. Why do I need to go bang? I'm going to just go out there with a couple people, do a little walking around, like observing, concealing an audio device, having nothing in my hand, enjoying nature, enjoying friendship, hiking, and wait for something to find me if they do. And there's been plenty of cases to where what Mitchell Townsend told me out in Mount St. Helens in Washington happened. I was like, this guy is either a genius or he really knows because he's been doing it as well. And it's true. It's almost like clockwork of what he instructed me to do. I did, just again, not knowing if Bigfoot's out there or not. And sure enough, the creepiness kind of came up, the things being thrown at us, slight things. No rocks, but just to get our attention and just to wait, it would get a little louder. We've seen, like I said, what looked like red eyes out there without shining, just self-illuminating red eyes that were either low to the ground, which I thought, well, that's weird. That's got to be like a cougar. But bitch says, well, no, they'll go into an army crawl on their belly. And again, how do you know this? This is almost like, it's almost like Hellier. You know what I mean? Where it's kind of like, how are you doing this? You are from Washington. I'm in Wisconsin. How are you doing this? But so there is something to it. And, so that's why I'm saying is that something out there is 100% real, but I can't say exactly what it is, but I can kind of allude to thinking of what it is because of all these other coincidences of activity.
I mean, that's often something that a lot of people say, Jay, regardless of what weird phenomenon they begin to investigate, that it just seems to start a series of inexplicable coincidences.
Right.
I mean, I've had
I,
one today,
yeah.
strangely enough. As I mentioned, I was interviewing a gentleman from Australia this morning, and he'd very kindly sent me a copy of his book, because you can't buy it in the UK anymore, sadly. And he'd got a copy and he'd sent it me. And he said, oh, at the end of the call, he said, oh, have you received my book yet? And I said, oh, no. And we've been talking about ghosts and things like this,
Right.
poltergeists. And I said, no. He said, oh, well, it'll turn up, because at the end of the day, he sent it from Australia to the UK. So, a couple of weeks is okay.
Right.
About an hour later, I was downstairs. There was a knock on the door. And there was a lady, and I went outside, and she said, oh, this has been incorrectly delivered to our house today, and I'm sorry I've opened it, but it's still sealed inside. I said, oh, right, okay. And I looked at it, and it said, from Tony Healy in Australia, and it was his book.
Wow. Wow. That's awesome. And how true is that, it is exactly what I always call synchronicity, more so than coincidence, because sometimes I don't believe in coincidence. I believe in synchronicity of everything that's happening, from my research to talking to you, to connecting with you. You know what I mean? And finding your podcast and listening to your different guests that have all, from all over the world, not just, in Wisconsin or United States, but everywhere. And that gives me the opportunity to listen to, what they're searching for to see if there's a correlation. So it's a great network, I'll tell you.
Oh, no. It's one of those things, Jay. I think, and you're probably the same. I wish I'd done it 5 years earlier, but you can't change the past.
No, and maybe the reason why you waited so long is because there was a reason for it, and I always look at it that way too, is you can't live your life with regret, and you can't, like you said, you can't change the past, and everything's different, but maybe there's that reason is coming up, and it's the reason why you waited.
Maybe, and the same for you, sir. So,
Maybe.
obviously, the film's been out for a few months now.
Yes.
So how was it? I mean, firstly, I think it was a. I think anybody that does anything like this is extremely brave, more than anything, Jay, because there'll always be some aspects of it that will, attract attention and draw a target on your back, as they say. But how's it been since the film came out? Because it you know, my perception of it is it's done very well for you.
Well, thank you. And I have gotten a lot of great reviews from, you know, from Adam Benedict and Tobias Whalen, that really helped with understanding or leaving the review of how they saw it for the people that are going to review it, or you know, to go down the line in Amazon, because that's what it's on right now is Amazon Prime. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it for free. But they left me some great reviews of the type of style it is. You know what? This is not Hollywood style. I feel like I have a talent for video editing because that's what I do for a living with weddings and doing commercials for companies or whatnot. So I didn't want to put this thing together as a grand old Hollywood production, but I wanted to put it together well enough to make it, wow, this was done from a home computer production because I do all this. And you know, with that being said, you're gonna see a lot of people during the reviews giving great reviews, 5 stars. Like you said, I'm no fool putting this out there, put a target on my back, and believe me, I've hit some stinker reviews with the 1 stars. And you know what? You it's part of the territory, and you gotta you learn from it. You know, it's not all praise. You know, if you didn't like it, you could tell me why you didn't like it, right? And I would learn from that. But when the title's a 1 star says, Jay, we don't care about your family, 1 star. You know, I think it's things like that you shrug off and laugh. But yeah, so there's been a lot of nasty ones on there. But you know what? Hey, you can please some of the people some of the time, but you can't please all of the people all of the time. And you have to have that type of mentality.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, you mentioned it earlier, Hellier, the Newkirks documentary. I saw Greg Newkirk's got a fabulous T-shirt made because they got a review of 1 star, and the review simply said, "No goblins."
And again, like you said, that's all attention.
Yeah,
So,
and it's a brilliant and fair play to him for getting it
yeah.
put on a T-shirt. It really made me laugh. Because I really enjoyed Hellier. I thought it was incredibly interesting and very different.
Yeah. So it's but it's exactly that. Whether you put a book out, a documentary, anything that you expose yourself to the public to, you take it. You know what? I'm still humbled by as many times as this film has been viewed on Amazon Prime, which has been over 75,000 times since
Ooh.
July. I never in my wildest dreams thought it would go there. Now it is on Amazon, but you know, who knows on how long will that be on there forever or whatnot. One of the days the party will be over and it will cease to exist on there. So I still have a professional Blu-rays done, made up, and of course they're, I would say they're Blu-rays for the United States. I don't know if they've kept them the same over in the UK for Blu-ray, but I do have those still for sale. And that's about it right now. So pretty much, I'm just doing podcasts like this, and you know. I did a bunch of conventions over September. October, believe it or not, is actually my slow time. So I've been getting out more hiking.
Yeah, getting out there, boots on the ground again, my friend.
That's what I have to do. That's my job. That's my passion.
Fantastic. Right. Well, listen, it's been marvelous to talk to you today, Jay. Like I said to you at the beginning, I really thoroughly enjoy the film. I've seen it a couple of times, and like I
Thank you.
said, I find it both charming and amusing for different reasons. But it's all in all a great film and well done. Very brave of you, as I said, to put it out there and just go for it. So all power to you, my friend.
Well, thank you so much, Paul. I truly appreciate that.
No, you're very welcome. So where can everybody see it? So it's available on Prime, I believe, yeah?
Yes, on Amazon Prime, just look up Finding Jay and you know, feel. You know, I always say I encourage people, watch it. This is what the truth is. You don't believe it, that's fine. You do believe it, that's fine. But I'm just telling you from my heart of hearts of putting this together, none of it was Hollywoodized, I should say, and tried to make it bigger or scarier or That's exactly what it is. In fact, I present what I have captured on video or film or audio and leave it for the viewers to listen to. It's one of the most, you can watch it for what it is. Like you said, amusing, entertaining. You can learn something from it, but find it out on Amazon Prime, Finding Jay.
Excellent. And where can everybody keep up to date with your blog or your work?
Well, I don't blog or anything, but I do post, and I do it on Facebook, and I do it on Instagram. I am on Twitter a little bit, but Twitter to me is, I don't know. I don't have a good feeling about Twitter. You go to Facebook, it seems to be happy. Go to Instagram, there's happy pictures. You go to Twitter, and there's nothing but negativity everywhere. So it's like I've been. You'll find me on there. I occasionally just check it and then pop off of it, but mostly Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, brilliant. And you still got the YouTube channel running?
Still, yes, I do still have the YouTube channel running under my name. If we're publishing it, just it's right. It's under Jay Bachochin for YouTube as well, and I do post there a lot too. Not as often as Facebook or whatnot, because I always thought YouTube, believe it or not, was more worthy of putting something up there than just like a 30-second clip. It's like as soon as I get something good I could put together, I'll put it there. Otherwise, it's on Facebook or Instagram.
Brilliant. Well, listen, thank you again for your time today. It's been a real pleasure, and congratulations on the film, and look forward to the sequel, and sooner rather than later, one hopes.
Yes.
Thank you again. Thanks, Jay.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on, Paul, and we'll see you in Social Mediaville.
Certainly will, sir. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.